And then somebody sees your crazy idea and another person's crazy idea, and they combine two or three of them and come up with a whole new crazy idea. You know, and I love that. To me, that is like humankind at its best.
Diz Runs Radio episode 377 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, no official sponsor today, though you can always make the argument that I am the official sponsor for all of these episodes, right? Today, I just want to remind you that as spring is approaching, if you're looking for a spring race to run, spring half marathon, marathon, or something that maybe extends into the summer, and you're looking for someone to help work with you, help guide you along the way, I do that. We've got three different levels of coaching available. Actually, four if you count the consultation. So if you're just dealing with a little issue and you just want to jump on the phone for 15 or 20 minutes, we can do that as well. But when it comes to actual creation of a plan for you, there's three different levels. So if you're interested, maybe want to kick the tires a little bit and find out if it might be something that you would actually want to go through with, head over to dizruns.com/coaching and check out what is available. And then if you have any questions, obviously you can let me know. And if you're interested, we can get this ball rolling and help you, gear up and get ready for, whatever is next on your running calendar. And before we dive into, to this episode, I do have to admit to being a yutz, which, I'm pretty sure you all are aware of that at this point. But I said in there in the intro and in the outro, the show notes of this episode would be at episode 380 or slash 380. This is episode 377, and I knew that. So when when you hear me say 380, don't go to dizruns.com/380 to get the show notes for this episode. Go to dizruns.com/377, because that's where they will be. Yeah. So anyway, now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys. It's always a pleasure for me to be able to reconnect with past guests of the show and play a little catch-up since the last time we had the chance to chat. I've had the chance to chat with hundreds of amazing runners on the show in the past few years, but I don't think that any has been more awe-inspiring to me personally than the man that I'm reconnecting with today. It's been 300 episodes since I've been able to chat with him, but I've been following his exploits closely on social media, and I'm excited to hear what he's got up his sleeve next, because knowing him, it's going to be something epic. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to reintroduce to you the ultra pedestrian, Mr. Roz Vaughn. Thanks for joining us today, Roz, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, blessings, Denny. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on your show. And congratulations on 300 episodes since we last spoke. How many total episodes have you done at this point?
Yeah, this will be 380. So we've been doing this for a minute.
Wow, that's impressive. I've got quite a backlog to catch up on. I have to admit, I haven't listened to them all quite yet.
Oh, it's a epic effort to try to get through this many episodes. So I don't fault you. But guys, if you haven't been paying attention to what Roz is up to, you need to. It's awe-inspiring as we're going to get into. But the website is ultrapedestrian.com, and I'm pretty much on all places social media. You can just find him at Ultra Pedestrian, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, pretty much wherever you want to be. You can probably check him out there and see what he's got going on. And the show notes for this episode will be, like I mentioned, dizruns.com/380. And if you want to catch up on our conversation from a couple of years ago, the original episode was dizruns.com/076. And I actually re-aired it as a best of as dizruns.com/198. So episode 198. And that one is probably still easily findable in your phone, since most of the apps don't allow more than about 250 or 300 episodes. So that one is probably still findable. But in any event, so Ross, the way we always start off the show, I mean, you probably remember, is to ask the simple question of favorite distance to race and why. And knowing you, favorite distance to race is kind of a iffy question, but I'm still going to throw it out there, see what happens, and then we'll pick up the pieces and go from there. So what is, as a reminder for folks who didn't maybe listen to the last episode, what is your favorite distance to race and why? And maybe it's changed. I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, well, I believe last time I mentioned 200 milers.
Yes.
Because I've done a fair amount of them. I've done six at this point, although five of those are the same race, the Pigtails 200. And that's still a distance that I really enjoy. It's just kind of fascinating because it's such a different realm. You know, 100 miles sounds so crazy to a lot of people. And there was a time in my life when 3 miles sounded crazy. So I don't mean to downplay it like it's this easy thing. Mm-hmm. But 100 miles is a very much a known quantity. You know, there's thousands of people that complete 100 milers every year. 200 milers caught my attention just because it was such a big question mark. I love question marks. I love when I look at an idea and I have to sort of step back and consider whether or not it seems humanly possible to me. And that's sort of part of my process. And then once I can decide that something is humanly possible, the interesting question for me becomes whether or not I'm the human for which it's possible. But really, in an overall sense, my fascination just is with non-standard distances. I suppose that would be the most accurate way to state it at this point. And getting into these realms that don't fit easy categorizations, like half marathon, marathon, ultra marathon, 100 miler, whatever. And specifically, I really enjoy races, and I don't want to sound like I'm dismissing races or slagging them off or anything like that. I really enjoy running through the woods and then having friends hand me refreshments every few miles. You know, there's nothing to complain about there. That's a blast no matter what. But I really am more fascinated by and more mentally engaged by unsupported and self-supported efforts. So through hiking, adventure running, things of that sort, where you don't have outside support. You don't have people bringing you materials. You're either shipping or placing caches ahead of time, or my favorite, doing it completely unsupported and carrying all the gear and all the fuel and supplies that you need from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's, you know, I laugh when I have people that you know, say that the 100 miler is my favorite distance because, you know, it's long enough and it hurts, but, you know, whatever. And then you know, you come on and say 200 miles. It's I don't even know where to go with that. Other than, you know, something new for me, I am signed up for my first ultra marathon, just a piddly little 50K in just a few weeks. But, so I'm not promising to do any 200 milers anytime soon, but I'm at least branching off past 26.2. So it's I'll get to at least a small little taste of what ultra living feels like.
Yeah, no, that's great. 50K is a great distance. I love 50Ks. That's a really enjoyable distance. And I mean, there was a time when I couldn't hike more than 2 miles, you know, where a mile into a hike, I would be bent over on the side of the trail with debilitating back spasms, trying to get my muscles to stop rebelling, you know, and stretch my lower back out so that I could just bag 2 miles, you know. Mm. So I don't want to come across as sounding egotistical, like, oh, 50K, that's no big deal, marathon, you know. I love all of those distances. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love going out and getting on the trail and moving through beautiful and challenging places on foot. So I'm really not overly concerned with labels one way or another. And I think it's just killer that you're doing your first ultra. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Cool. And I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, that you haven't always been this, you know, ridiculous distance, you know, covering guy to guy. Cause you know, we've got a wide cross section of folks that listen to the show. So obviously no matter where you are, whatever you're doing, you know, some of the I hope that the things that we're talking about today, people can realize that, and I have no trouble realizing that you're not the kind of guy that's like, oh yeah, you know, look at me, I do this, and you only, you know, quote unquote, only do that. So just putting that out there, that's not anything that we're getting at today.
I'm very much a, I mean, I'm kind of known for saying that I'm a backpacker who became a back of the packer, mm-hmm. you know, and culturally within running and trail culture, that's really where I see myself and where I fit is in the back of the pack, you know, and that's why I make up pithy phrases like, an ultra marathon is like a mullet, business up front, party in the back, you know, because that's what I enjoy. In fact, my friend, John Reese off of that coined the term party pace to refer to just, you know, cruising along at a sustainable and enjoyable pace. And I think that is really a fascinating idea. And that's something that's very healthy for running culture to consider and even embrace. You know, my background is on the trail. I was an old school backpacker, you know, carrying a big, heavy pack mm-hmm. with ridiculous amounts of gear, grinding out, you know, 8 mile days. I mean, back in the day, a 10 mile day, double digit mileage was huge for me. That was crazy. You know, like as a family, whatever, 17, 18 years ago, if we had a 10 or 11 or 12 mile day coming up, that was something big that we were like, you know, focusing on and worried about ahead of time. You know, so my point is that I'm really coming from trail culture rather than race culture. So my sort of values and perspective don't set speed above everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, racing really has that race culture, which a lot of runners come from and which a lot of running culture is influenced by, focuses on speed as the primary metric for gauging performance. And trail culture, while there's certainly an appreciation for speed, especially in terms of efficiency, trail culture focuses more on a sustainable effort because it doesn't matter how fast you run into the woods if by the time you get where you're going, you can't then run back out. Right. So sustainability is a much, you know, much more highly valued aspect of performance in trail culture on a larger scale, on a broader scale. And I really think that overall, even throughout running culture, sustainability is something that should be more highly valued mm-hmm. because realistically for your everyday runner, for 99% of runners, sustainability is more important than that one-time performance. There's so much influence in the running scene from elite performances, which is totally understandable because the elite athletes that can go out and run 100 miles in 15 hours. I mean, that's amazing. That is inspiring and astounding. And I am, you know, as impressed by that as anybody is. But the thing is, those athletes, they're training generally to put up two or three of those types of performances a year. Mm-hmm. And I really think that the vast majority of runners would rather be able to put up a good, sustainable, enjoyable run, you know, 50 or 70 or 100 times a year, rather than just having that one peak performance that, you know, that they train for and then have to recover from mm-hmm. and all that. So I'm kind of a proponent of sustainability and sustainable pacing and training and recovery so that you can actually run more frequently if not at the same speed perhaps. So, but you know, it's funny, I have a quick anecdote about that. So Rob Krar, right, the ultra runner, mm-hmm. most people listening to this podcast are gonna recognize that name right off the bat. He and his wife, Christine, are super kind people. And when we first thru-hiked the Arizona Scenic Trail, he and I had some Facebook interactions because when he set the rim to rim to rim fastest known time a few years ago was just a couple days after I did my sextuple crossing mm-hmm. of the Grand Canyon. And so we kind of connected over that, just messaging about our different experiences. Right. And so they had said when we came through Flagstaff on the AZT to let them know ahead of time and that we could crash at their place, and they come out and pick us up and just like, you know, an amount of kindness that right. was totally unexpected and really unnecessary. They're just really kind people. But when we were hanging out at their place and chatting with them, at one point, Kathy was talking to Rob, and he was still working as a pharmacist at that point and had been working the night shift, mm-hmm. you know, working graveyard for years. And so she was at that point, he had only run 200 milers at that point. And Kathy asked him if working graveyard for so long had helped him with being able to run through the night during 100 milers. And there was just kind of a slightly awkward moment where Rob sort of shuffled, you know, his feet and looked down at the ground. And then he said, well, to be honest with you, I've never actually gone through the night during a 100 miler. because he finishes quickly enough that he's done by dark, at least at Western State. So,
yeah, that's moving right along when you can do a knockoff 100 miles before it gets dark.
Yeah, yeah, I can't imagine that.
I can't either. It's something that I'm gonna be in the party in the back mode on my ultra for sure. I'm gonna be enjoying myself and chatting it up and making it through, not up there in the front where it's all business and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you're doing your first 50K, you know, and you're a marathoner and used to that distance. Essentially, the marathon ends up just being the commute.
Right.
Right. Because, I mean, 26.3 is when you actually begin running your ultra.
Right.
That's a good approach. That's a good approach.
Yeah, the 26.2 is just the warm up. And then the work begins. And then the party begins.
Right.
Oh, goodness. Now you're making me rethink myself here, Rob.
Well, good. Enjoy that. I mean, to me, I love that. You know, that sense when you're going into something and like I know an adventure is really what I should be doing, where when I think about it ahead of time, I get an adrenaline dump, you know, and my heart rate accelerates and I can hear blood pounding in my ears and I even get a little bit shaky. I mean, my big adventures, it's not uncommon for me to like wake up at night, you know, thinking about them and overwhelmed by what I'm facing, you know. So I think that's good. I think having that question mark is what's fascinating about ultra distance and about endurance adventuring of any sort, whether it's in an organized race or an adventure run or a fastest known time attempt or whatever.
Right. Speaking of fastest known times and the only known times, the other thing that you've kind of put yourself on the map with over the years of doing something that no one's ever done before and kind of setting that mark out there. When you and Kathy or just you, if it's a solo attempt that you're going on, when you're coming up with some of these things, like I know we talked about before with doing the only known times or the fastest known times, like it's kind of, I mean, the world is your palette basically. Like there's no shortage of options of things that you can do, but at times is that almost debilitating to have so many different options? Or I guess where I'm trying to go is how do you come up with, this is something that I feel like giving it a shot, how does that process go from, you know, what are we going to do this year to mapping out, you know, however many different attempts that you're going to take on, if that sort of makes sense where I'm going with that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a bunch of different factors. Usually an only known time idea comes to me based on the terrain or based on the goal. Either based on the geography, something like that, or based on what hasn't been done in that setting. So the first thing I ever did that kind of coined the term only known time was a double Wonderland, right? So the Wonderland Trail is a 93-mile trail around the base of Mount Rainier. And at the time, I was really had just transitioned from backpacking to running and just reached the point where I was being able to do ultra distance runs. And so that was the obvious choice for me. The Wonderland Trail is really the trail that has made me who I am. There's no two ways about that. And the first time that I did it with my wife, Kathy, and our daughter, Angela, who was 7 at the time, it took us 21 days to do the entire trail. So you can do the math, and that's not an impressive amount of daily mileage. We had a couple of 0 days in there, and
it's pretty impressive with a 7-year-old, though. Let's not.
I mean, and she carried a lot of her own gear, so that was super fun. But so basically, coming off of that, years down the road, I'd done the Wonderland a bunch more times, and I'd done it with Kathy supporting me in 4 days and 3 days, and then 2 days with a group of people. And at that point, I was really starting to look at, okay, what's something unique I could do on the Wonderland Trail? Because I was looking at the fastest known times, and they were out of my league. I wasn't going to be able to do that. So I was thinking about, well, people generally do the Wonderland clockwise, because that makes the climb steeper and the descents more runnable. So what about doing it counterclockwise? You know, but that was just kind of splitting hairs. And then I had like this little epiphany where it occurred to me that the way to really truly experience the trail in the most complete way would be to do it both directions in a single push. Mm. So that's the sort of, you know, foundation for Only Known Time projects that come up to me, is when I see a unique way to experience the terrain, something of that sort. Or with the sextuple Grand Canyon crossing, at that point, a few people had done quad crossings, mm-hmm. and nobody had done, you know, six. I mean, five was an option, except that would have left me, you know, with the canyon between me and my car.
Right.
So
right.
That's kind of a thing. So it made six a little more logical. Right. But it was just wanting to kind of push those boundaries and find a unique experience. So turning around at the South Kaibab trailhead and dropping into the canyon for the fifth time in a single push, those are the moments that I love, like taking mm-hmm. those steps that in a way nobody has ever taken before. And I may not be taking them well. My form may not be good. I might look ridiculous, you know, but being the person to take those steps is a fascinating idea for me. And then beyond that, I mean, I have more projects than I can do each year. So it becomes a matter of kind of doing prep work, doing research and what I can on projects. And I'll basically have, you know, 6, 8, 10 ideas in my head, some of which I've announced publicly, some of which I've mentioned to sponsors, most of which Kathy will know about, but maybe not quite all of them, depending on how far along in their development they are in my mind. But, and I'll kind of just push on projects. I'll do a little bit of work and I'll give things a little push and I'll see what goes. And so sometimes, whatever it is, sometimes a sponsor will come forward and be like, hey, we really like this and we want to help make this happen. Or a friend will be like, hey, that project sounds interesting. Maybe we could do that together, or, you know, or whatever. Or like, I won't have work for 2 weeks and my budget will go to crap and I'll realize, okay, I'm not going to be able to buy a plane ticket to go to Zion and do that thing I've been wanting to do. So it's basically like that, is I have a bunch of ideas working and they usually grow out of some sort of organic challenge based on the terrain or based on what has or hasn't been done there before. And then I kind of see what happens. And when something is going, I keep pushing on that. And at some point something happens.
Right. Right. When the rubber finally meets the road and you're going, you take off, What's the feeling like when you're setting out to do an Only Known Time? Is it nervous? Is it excitement? Is it trepidation? Is it a combination of a whole host of things? What's that like for you at the start of one of your adventures?
You sum it up pretty well with the whole host. It's all of that. I mean, there's a moment I have just about every time, and it's usually when I've packed up the car, you know, and I've got all my gear loaded in and I step back and close the back of the rig when it hits me. And I just kind of think to myself, what have I gotten myself into? You know, it's at that point, it's when all the gear is in the car and it's when I've made my announcements on social media. So, you know, because it's not at that point, it's not a thing where I can just go out and quietly fail. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, if I fail, then I'm going to have to come back and make the follow up posts and, you know, talk about what happened. And that's fine, too, because that's basically the ante, you know, that's kind of like your entry fee for an Only Known Time or fastest known time. You don't actually pay a fee to a race director, mm-hmm. but you pay a fee to social media and kind of to public opinion, because you put it out there and you say, I'm going to attempt this. And then you have to say, well, I failed, or I did it, but I had to sacrifice this aspect of my ethic in order to complete it. And that's a kind of fun part of it, where you're sort of putting some skin in the game with risking your reputation or risking the judgment mm-hmm. of the public or whatever that may be. So yeah, all of those things come together, and it's always a combination of self-doubt, you know, questioning my abilities, questioning my decision-making processes, and yet looking forward to the challenge and gearing myself up mentally. I try to put myself in the mental space of realizing that I will most likely have to dig deeper than I've ever dug before. Mm-hmm. So I go into an only known time attempt with the idea that I am going to be attempting the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And that's the mindset that I use. So, you know, it's funny because I've trained in martial arts off and on throughout my whole life, you know, from the time I was 10 or so studying Shaolin Kung Fu to Aikido in my early 20s and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and no-gi grappling and mixed martial arts. And that seems like an awkward segue, but where I'm going with it is that even a lot of runners and trail runners seem a little baffled when I talk about some of my only known time adventures and things of that sort. But people who really seem to get it are mixed martial artists that I've trained with. And I mean, I haven't competed in that for years at this point since before I turned 40. I'm 45 now. I think my last fight was when I was 39. But I compete in a bunch of jiu-jitsu tournaments and submission grappling tournaments and three amateur cage matches, and trained a lot with those guys. And those were the people that actually really got it and really kind of understood what I was saying. And it sounds funny and it might sound kind of off, but really the only difference between the two is time frame. You know, mixed martial arts is very fast. It's taking place in a very accelerated time frame. It's a short period of time that's very intense, whereas endurance adventuring is a very long, slow, stretched out time frame. But other than the time frame, it's very, very much the same thing where you are reliant on yourself. And just like it's one person versus another person, you know, in a mixed martial arts match, it's you taking on the challenge that you're taking on. It's you versus that challenge. And that's what it's all about. And like stripping everything away to just that one-on-one challenge is absolutely fascinating for me. And it's everything you said. It's exciting and it's scary and it's everything in between.
Yeah, I'm sure. When you're out there on whatever trail or whatever thing that it is that you're doing, whether it's when you're alone or whether when Kathy's with you or anyone else, if you're doing it with some other folks, what do you do or how do you combat the I have to imagine the inevitable dark times, the times when you know the mind isn't as strong, when maybe things seem to be going against you, when there's a bad break or when the weather turns or whatever it is that kind of causes, you know, the mental side to kind of collapse a little bit. Because I mean, you know, point blank, I'll be honest, like I have those moments during a marathon, and I'm sure I'm gonna have those moments during my 50K, and that's a, you know, without trying to undermine what I've done, I mean that's a drop in the bucket compared to some, you know, a 600-mile, you know, trip through Arizona back and forth or on that yo-yo, or you know, six times across the Grand Canyon or whatever. How do you deal with or how do you get through those times when mentally it's just that's the biggest struggle that you're facing?
I have a number of specific tools and techniques that I use, and I'll share those. But a big part of it for me is understanding that those dark times are simply a part of it, that you're going to experience those. And that's part of what is fascinating for me about the longer distances is a shorter distance. You have the possibility of engineering a brief window of time where everything goes perfectly. But part of what's so fascinating about 200 milers and about, you know, unsupported efforts and bigger efforts like that is that that's not possible. There are going to be things that go wrong. And that's part of what I enjoy and part of what fascinates me about those sorts of adventures. So it's a huge thing to simply let go of attachment to the idea that everything has to be perfect and realizing that there are going to be dark times and that they aren't necessarily significant. It's just something that you're going to move through. It's just something that you experience. Just like there are going to be those perfect floaty moments where the miles just drift by and all of a sudden you're like, oh, just bagged 12 and didn't even realize it. You know, right. There are going to be those times. But it's like the fable about the ancient king who had his courtiers design a ring, I think, you know, engraved to help him get through both good times and bad times. And that they engraved it with the phrase, "This too shall pass." Mm. You know, it's a little bit trite, but it's real, is that those dark times are going to move through them, and they have causes. You know, when you're going, when you're covering extreme distances and making that sort of effort and running big calorie deficits, that affects your brain chemistry, mm-hmm. and that affects your mood. So that's going to affect how you perceive what you're doing and how you feel about what you're doing. And teaching yourself to recognize those feelings, and then in your mind to be able to sort of take a step back and look at yourself from outside and realize, okay, I'm a modern biped. I've been on the trail for, you know, 3 days. I've covered 102 miles and I've got another 98 to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm feeling this way because my blood sugar is bottoming out. I'm running a huge calorie deficit. My legs are sore because I'm undertrained, because of course you're undertrained for 200 miles. You know, there isn't like being right. trained for 200 miles. It's a skill set. So to me, that's a huge part of it, is simply realizing that feeling that way is part of the experience and that it isn't necessarily significant.
If I can cut in, are you almost just taking the emotion out and just replacing it with logic and like, of course I'm feeling, of course I'm having a hard time, because everybody is.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's not, you're not going to eliminate the emotion, mm-hmm. but you can take a look at yourself while you're experiencing that, and you can understand that those emotions are the result of what you're doing, that they're a part of it, and that they don't necessarily mean that your entire world is crumbling or that you're failing. You know, mm-hmm. it's just part of the experience. Your brain chemistry and your mood are affected by an extreme endurance effort. Mm-hmm. And then like moving through that, I have a number of different techniques I use. A simple one is having a treat. I'll save some sort of a treat, like something that I don't have a lot of, but that I really enjoy, and I'll try to keep it for a really low moment like that. on my unsupported traverse of Washington, Kathy had actually snuck a vegan dark chocolate bar into my pack. Mm. That I didn't know about, which is a little bit funny because that's adding some weight.
Right.
So it was a thoughtful sort of sabotage. But to me, that was perfect, because chocolate affects your brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. So having that chocolate bar for low times, that was exactly what I saved it for. And I had, I think, 2 squares off of it early in the trip when I was having some really low emotional periods. And then I saved it for the very end. And the final 50 miles of that trip, all I had left was that chocolate bar. Mm. And I, to make it last, I was watching my GPS, and every 5 miles, I would have 1 little square of chocolate.
Wow.
Just for the emotional boost. Mm-hmm. You know, I did the math and it came out to like 3 calories per mile.
Right.
You know, it was not enough to fuel me physically over that mileage, but it was a boost to my brain chemistry that helped improve my mood, mm-hmm. and helped me cover it. Plus, it gave me that little treat to look forward to every 5 miles, especially since I was, other than that, completely out of food. So,
yeah, I was going to say, you're getting that little bit of that. That's that little carrot to just keep moving. And then you get a little more and a little more and a little more as you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And chocolate, I mean, in addition to the way the chocolate specifically affects your brain chemistry, it also is high in fat, which mm-hmm. also affects your brain chemistry. You know, fat gives you feelings of satiation and, you know, other positive mental effects like that, that a, you know, that a gel or a straight sugar burst isn't going to give mm-hmm. you. So that, I mean, that's one trick that works, and it's not, and it isn't always something that chemically is that scientifically well suited. Another favorite thing of mine is wasabi flavored toasted sesame or toasted seaweed. Sorry, wasabi flavor toasted seaweed. Just because when you're, pardon me, when you're out on the trail, you're having so many things that are sweet and fatty and all of that, and everything kind of comes from this one limited spectrum of flavors. And a seaweed, salty, spicy wasabi flavor is just so completely different that it really gives me a big mental boost. So I'll always have my little baggie of wasabi toasted seaweed, and I save that for a moment when I'm feeling really run down and need it like that. So, and then I have a number of techniques I use, one of which is just to think of Sisyphus, right? So Sisyphus was the damned Greek who was forced for all eternity to roll a rock or a boulder up a hill, at which point it would roll back down and he would have to go down and roll it up again. So basically he invented hill repeats.
Yes, he did.
So, you know, those aren't this new breakthrough training thing. That's an ancient Greek myth. But I look at it in those terms and I think, okay, I'm out here, I'm struggling, I've got a strained muscle in my calf, or I've got, you know, weird, you know, phantom pains in my foot that I can't track down no matter how many times I shake out my socks and retie my shoe. All those things are happening, and I think about it and I go, okay, if this was my own personal Groundhog Day and I was just going to be doing this forever from here on out, how bad would that really be? And when I really step back and look at it, it's not that bad. I mean, maybe I'm in pain, maybe I'm thirsty, maybe I'm hungry, but I'm doing my very favorite thing in the world to do.
Right.
You know, moving through beautiful and challenging places is what I love to do. And I do enjoy cruising down, you know, an easy duffy trail that's got a slight downhill bent to it. But on a deeper level, I more enjoy grinding out a crazy climb, even if it has me cussing at every footstep, you know.
Right.
There's something about it that engages me on a really primal level and that I genuinely enjoy. So when I think of it in those terms, like if this was all I was ever going to be doing again, then I'm actually fine with it. And that helps me just come to terms with it. A lot of it has to do really with managing feelings. It's easy for us to get overwhelmed by how difficult something feels and to be thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm 12 miles into a 100 miler and I just turned my ankle. How am I going to do 88 more miles? But the fact is, you're not going to do 88 more miles. Nobody runs 88 miles at once. You only run a mile. And then you do that 87 more times.
Right.
But you know, thinking of it in terms of biting off 88 miles is an illusion, because you don't run the 88 miles at once. You just run a mile.
Right.
So focusing on just the next few steps rather than the entire overall goal is another thing that can be really helpful. And on crazy hard grinding climbs, a lot of the time I'll just use 100 steps. I'll force myself to grind out 100 steps. And once I do 100, I can stop for a moment and catch my breath, or I can lean over on my trekking poles, or I can stand in the shade for a moment. But I make that rule that I have to do 100. And it might take a long time and it might not be pretty, but you can grind out any climb 100 steps at a time.
Yeah. And that's one of those lessons that translates no matter the distance. So like if you're struggling in a marathon, like, you know, force yourself to go the next 100 steps or to the next mile marker before you stop, or you know, to the next aid station or whatever it might be. You know, same thing for a half marathon, same thing for if it's your first 5K. It's a universal idea when things are going, when you're struggling, to just, you know, make it bite size as much as possible.
Yep. Yeah. You know, and 5K is actually a really fascinating distance, because it seems to me like that is sort of this natural barrier for a lot of people. I know it was for me. I know it was for Kathy. Like 3 miles, especially when you're starting off running, is this barrier that just ends up being kind of hard to go past at first. And I began running before Kathy did. We were both backpackers. But I started really getting into it after seeing trail runners and wanting to be able to just enjoy more trail in a single serving. And she finally started running with me. And at first we would do this, you know, 1.5 mile out and back at our house. So it was 3 miles round trip and it was on a dirt road. And for so long, when we would be coming back near the driveway, I'd be like, okay, hon, do you want to just, how about we just go back down to the next road and then come back, you know, just add on 1/2 mile. And she'd go, nope. And just turn onto the driveway and run up to the house. And it took quite a while before she wanted to go past 3 miles, you know, and before she felt like that was where she wanted to be. And now she's completed 100 milers, 150 milers, You know, she's set the inaugural women's fastest known time for the Arizona Trail a few years ago. That time since been taken down by Anish, but kind of no surprise there.
Right.
You know, she's pretty amazing. And then the AZT yo-yo. I mean, Kathy's gone way beyond the 3 mile mark. Mm-hmm. But it was fascinating to kind of watch how there is that's what seems like kind of an organic boundary there that's hard for people to push past. But once you do, it's like wide open, just like you're talking about with your first ultra. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, once you go past 26.2, it's not like just 26.3 is it. And you're like, they're done taking care of that. It actually just opens up everything. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, oh, OK, well, I guess maybe I can do a 50K, a 50 miler, 100 miler, maybe a transcon. You know, mm-hmm. There are just suddenly possibilities, crazy possibilities everywhere.
Yeah, I would be. I'd be lying if I said, I don't want to say nervous, but if I'm not at least intrigued by what's going to happen after the first one and where, you know, where my loyalties will lie. Are they going to stick mostly to the roads, or am I going to be trail bound, or, you know, who knows what's going to happen? But we'll play it by ear.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people at their first ultras, at their first 100s, and have them say, nope, never again. This is horrible. I'm not. And then I see them in a race a few months later. Then I see them in another 100. I see them in another 50K, you know, because just it only takes a couple days before you forget all the horror and you just remember the good. And you're like, yeah, I should probably do that again.
Yep. I mean, that was me at the end of my first marathon. It was, you know, I never at about mile 20, never do this again. And by the time you get to the finish line, like it's that emotion changes. But I still said never again. But after it didn't take long, you know, and then I'm you know, sign up for another one. And you know, you get hooked. So I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what maybe is up next. I saw a post of yours the other day where you'd ordered, like, I don't know, I didn't do the math, but 100, 150 pounds of dehydrated food. So that leads me to believe that you and Kathy are fixing to set off on another journey, another adventure. What's can we talk about it? Is it public knowledge yet?
It's kind of. We've hinted about it, but yeah, we can definitely talk about it. So our next big project is that we are going to be attempting to yo-yo the Grand Enchantment Trail. So a year and a half ago, we became the first people to yo-yo the Arizona National Scenic Trail. And that's an 800-mile trail that runs north and south between the Mexico border and the Utah border across Arizona. And there's a limited window in which you can do it because of it being in the desert. You can't do it in the middle of the summer because it's simply too hot. It's ridiculously dangerous. So there's a spring window and a fall window where you're either, you know, chasing spring or you're running ahead of winter. So we did it in the fall and really had some crazy weather. I mean, started off in triple digits, but within the first few days there was a big rainstorm that came through. The monsoons were supposed to be over with, but apparently this was a tail end or just a freak storm. So on our fourth day, I think we were wading through knee deep creeks in the desert.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and then we ended up having days and days hiking in the snow. We had days where our shoes were freezing on our feet, times that we only got in, you know, 10 or 12 miles simply because it was too cold and our gear was suffering like that, and we would have to stop and set up our tarp and shelter for the night. But when we were doing that, and this is often the case, and I drive poor Kathy crazy with this, is I'll have these crazy ideas while we're already in the middle of doing something crazy. And she's just like, I don't want to hear it. I'm having enough trouble mentally dealing with what we're attempting right now. I don't want to hear your ridiculous ideas for something we could do in the future. But I was just thinking through trails, and I knew there was the Grand Enchantment Trail. So it's another approximately 800-mile trail. It's a little less, that runs roughly east and west between Phoenix, Arizona and Albuquerque, New Mexico. Then there's also the Oregon Desert Trail, which is a roughly 800-mile trail running east and west across Oregon, the interior of Oregon. And then there's also the Hayduk Trail, which is really more, it's a route more so than a trail. It links together some trails, but it's a lot of cross-country travel and some route finding and bushwhacking and stuff like that. But I just realized that there was this grouping of roughly 800-mile desert trails that all formed a crazy long-term project idea. And the Hey Duke one especially is really out there. But nobody had yo-yoed at that point any of these trails, which means, you know, starting at one end, hiking or running to the other, and then turning around and going back to where you started, just like a yo-yo going out to the end of its string and then returning to your hand, right? Mm-hmm. So I realized that there were these only known times just sitting there waiting to be done. And an only known time I refer to as the Schrodinger's cat of adventuring. Because when you set an only known time, it simultaneously exists as both the fastest and the slowest known time for a trip. You know, it doesn't resolve into a single reality until somebody else puts up a time on that trail, and then you know whether it's slowest or fastest. Mm-hmm. But again, that's those big open question marks that my brain just loves to chew on and think about. So I came up with that idea during the AZT yo-yo and shared it with her. And I don't know if she even responded verbally. I think she kind of just shook her head and kept hiking in front of me.
As wives are known to do when husbands come up with some random idea.
So once we were off the trail and really wanting to get back on and not stoked about being back in civilization and everything, she came on board and she's like, yeah, you know, you're right. We should do that. It's just sitting there waiting to be done, and we're the people to do it. So that is our grand overall scheme, is to do the Arizona National Scenic Trail, which we've already ticked off, mm-hmm. the Grand Enchantment Trail and the Oregon Desert Trail, to yo-yo all three of those as a desert yo-yo triple crown. Yeah, right. Desert yo-yo triple crown. And then if we accomplish all of those, to try to make it a grand slam by attempting to yo-yo the Hey Duke Trail. Hmm. So we are to the point where we actually had intended to attempt the GET, the Grand Enchantment Trail, last fall, and we just weren't able to make it happen. We weren't able to get the budget together to do it. We were still paying off other adventures and, just couldn't make it happen. I mean, you know, we're not, we don't have careers. We're not really like valuable members of society. You know, we do manual labor. We do whatever we can mm-hmm. to pay the bills and put some food on the table. And then when we can, we buy a bunch of dehydrated food and we go do something big and fun and crazy. And, you know, we're atypical athletes. We're certainly not the standard athlete that companies are used to sponsoring and supporting and seeing the value in. And we're really fortunate in that we do have a number of companies that see the value in what we're doing and that support what we're doing. And with the Grand Enchantment Trail in particular, both Ultra Running and Nathan Sports came forward with sponsorship to help make it possible. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were able to make that big food order that we did just the other day, is because I'd been talking to them and they were, you know, running stuff up the chain of command and all that. And I finally got the word from both of them that they not only supported what we were doing, but were willing to actually help make it happen, which is just an incredible blessing. It's something that we're so thankful for. I can't express it enough. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, really want to give a particular shout out to Nathan Sports and Ultra Running for having, you know, a progressive enough mindset to understand our vision and to see the value in a couple of fairly atypical athletes like Kathy and I, you know. And then also Trail Butter and Honey Stinger and Seven Hills Running Shop in Seattle all help make our adventures possible with support of product and with helping promote what we do mm-hmm. online. And that sort of support for us is absolutely necessary, because, you know, like right now we're pulling weeds for a living.
Right.
You know, it's there's this funny dichotomy in my life where there's groups of people that know me as an adventurer and there's groups of people that know me as a reggae singer, you know, but most of the people in my everyday life just think of me as the funny looking guy that pulls their weeds.
Right. Right.
So, so that's our life, you know, and that's what we've been doing and how we've been making this happen. I mean, if we had you know, for some reason, if what we're doing became widely popular and we had big sponsors come forward and give us an annual budget, then we would just be on the trail most of the time throughout the year. You know, like I was saying, I've got more projects in mind every year than I can do, both time wise and certainly budget wise. So that's what we're working toward. That's our long term goal. And we've been making good progress in the time since you and I last spoke. And we're really thankful for that. It's funny. It's a bigger challenge for me to like put together a project proposal and talk on the phone to a corporate representative than it is for me to cross the Grand Canyon six times.
Right.
Like, I'm comfortable just being like stinky and uncouth and out there running around in the woods, but like trying to comport myself, you know, on the telephone in a business-like manner. Mm-hmm. That's challenging. That's taken me out of my comfort zone. So that's what I've been working on a lot recently. And it is, you know, it's paying off. We're making progress with that aspect of our adventuring as well.
Well, and I don't know that I have that much weight to throw around. I don't know that I have any weight to throw around, but if there's anything I can do to help in that front, please don't hesitate. I'm glad to let you, you know, just rattle off Ultra and Nathan's and Trail Butter and Honey Stinger. And I can't remember the name of the store in Seattle, but you know,
Seven Hills.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm glad to do that, because those are all other than Seven Hills, which obviously, I mean, I'm in Florida, so that they don't, I can't really support them or have them support me, but all the other companies, I've used their products. I'm familiar with them. They're great companies, and obviously we have the Ultra relationship as well. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad to allow that or to help foster that, and hopefully help this to continue to grow and become something where, you know, every so often when you're off the trail for more than a handful of minutes, we can connect and get up to date with what's going on, because it's inspiring to me. Like I said at the very beginning, this is the stuff that you guys do just makes me shake my head and go, wow. Like, and also it does kind of put it into perspective of, like, you know, all the reasons I've said that I couldn't or wouldn't run an ultra, like, you know, those are just me deciding that I didn't want to, not that I couldn't, because clearly, clearly, well farther than 50K is something that's possible.
Totally. Yeah. Well, thank you. We really appreciate it too. And, you know, I hope for people listening, they understand that, I'm not just like shilling for these mm-hmm. corporations. It has to do with personal connections as well. There's a person there at these companies that actually looked at what we're doing and is like, yeah, that is something that we want to be sure happens. So I'm thankful for that. And I appreciate the opportunity to mention those companies helping support us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as we're getting close to wrapping up, a couple other things that I just want to at least touch on. And you know, if we end up spending a little bit longer, that's fine. As long as you've got the time, I've got the time. So,
oh yeah, you know me, I'm slow, but I don't stop. So I give interviews the same way that I run.
Perfect. So. Perfect. So, but before we got started, you mentioned, something that's in the works that, you know, hopefully this will air, because, if not, if something falls through, we'll have to cut this off, but or edit this part out. But, you're hopefully, or you've already done the filming part, but hopefully pretty soon it'll be announced that, you're part of, a little bit of a reality show, which is awesome, and I'm looking forward to checking that out. As much as I've kind of gotten away from reality TV, knowing somebody that's on one will certainly change the TV watching habits for the time that it's on the air. So I know you can't say a whole lot, and there's some confidentiality things and whatnot. But tell us as much as you can about what is happening, and then as long as it all goes through, we'll get some people to watch it as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I was lucky enough to be involved in a show that Fox has put together, which is, it's a survival competition series is what they call it. And it's the show is called Kicking and Screaming, and it's going to be premiering March 9th at 9 p.m. on Fox. So, and it's an hour long show, and it's going to be, you know, running for 8 weeks, I believe. So, but March 9th is when it premieres. And yeah, I can't go into specifics, but they took 10 expert survivalists and 10 pampered, you know, not indoorsy people, So do you want to guess which of those I was?
I think it's pretty safe to say you're the outdoorsy survival person.
Yeah. So, you know, so technically I'm an expert survivalist mm-hmm. now, because that's what's going to be said on TV and that's what makes things real. So, so they took us and dumped us in the jungle in Fiji.
Wow.
And filmed everything that happened. And I haven't even seen, you know, clips yet or anything like that. They really keep you in the dark when you participate in one of these shows. They're very much about, you know, keeping information in until it airs, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. But so I haven't even seen what it looks like. It's supposed to be really funny, and you can tell by the setup that there's definitely the potential for humor there. Mm-hmm. I got to meet a bunch of super cool and interesting people that I would never have met otherwise. I got to go to Fiji, which wouldn't have happened otherwise, and have some crazy experiences. And beginning March 9th, people will be able to see some of them. So it's, you know, it's a little bit odd. It's kind of contrary to my mission and personality to be encouraging people to watch television.
Right.
So if you don't watch television, don't start because of me.
Fair enough.
Well, but if you already watch TV and you want to check out the show, you know, please do. Hopefully it'll be funny. Or if you just want to see how silly I look on live TV, that alone might be motivation.
Oh, that's, and if you can't answer this question, no worries. Is it a competition show? And you don't need to get into specifics, obviously, if you can't. Or is it just kind of chronicling how things go for a certain period of time?
Yeah, it is a competition
okay.
show. And all, you know, I didn't know, like, they kept us in the dark until like it began. I mean, the people participating in the show didn't know the format, didn't know what it was going to be like, you know, just really had no idea until we were actually there and they began unveiling stuff. So it's not like going on, you know, a show that's been running for 12 seasons where you right. can research it and you know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
in fact, I had kind of a panicky moment when we were arriving in the airport in Fiji, and I started thinking, you know what, maybe what if, like, we're being duped, and what if this is actually backwards? Maybe it's not us expert survivalists taking pampered people into the jungle. Maybe instead they're going to put us in high society and have us try to survive in, you know, like a mansion or something.
Now that would be a show worth watching right there.
Yeah, I was really kind of freaking out about that idea when I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? But fortunately, it did actually take place in the natural world. So I enjoyed that.
Excellent. Well, I have about a dozen other questions, but I'm sure you can't get into most of them. I don't want to put you in a position where you might say something that's wrong. So March 9th on Fox, if you're a TV watcher, check it out. It's I'll be watching it. So if you forget, don't worry, I'll remind you, because it'll be all over my social media stuff. But that sounds like it'll be fun for sure.
Yeah, it should be. So I, you know, it's funny because I'm actually going to be on the trail. We're beginning our GET yo-yo on March 4th.
So you won't even be able to see it.
Yeah, I won't even be able to see it until we get back off the trail. But isn't March 4th the perfect day to start a through hike? You know, March 4th, it's a command to go
forward.
There you go.
Yeah, that is perfect.
Yeah, so kind of stoked on that.
Fantastic. All right, so Ross, as we're finishing up, something that's new since when we first chatted. I don't know that it's not that new anymore, but it's certainly within the last, I don't know, several months. The way I like to finish the show is with what I've been calling a philosophical question. So obviously, as per everything else that I've asked or that we talked about, there's no right answers, there's no wrong answers, but something to just kind of a good way to kind of put a bow on things. And I have a list of, like, I don't know, four or five questions. I usually pick one, but I can't even say usually anymore, because half the time I end up going off the script based on something that we talked about or didn't talk about, or something that's more personal to whoever I'm talking with. And that's what I'm going to do today as well. So you've done, obviously, lots of different trails. You've seen, I would imagine, probably some of the most beautiful parts of the country, and with being in, you know, maybe even some parts of the world, you know, just by being off roads and away from civilization and just seeing some things. I'm going to take one answer off the list, because I know the Wonderland Trail is nearest and dearest to your heart. But outside of the Wonderland, what is in you know, obviously completely in your opinion, what is your favorite / most beautiful trail that you've seen and been on and been able to experience in one of the many adventures that you've been on?
Hmm. You know, that's a challenging question in so many ways. Yeah, it's a good thing you took the Wonderland off, because that is my go-to answer. You know, I really do like the Arizona National Scenic Trail. I mean, it's crazy. It's a really, really difficult trail. A lot of the trail surface is kind of horrible, like big, you know, ankle rolling rocks and just brutal climbs and crazy hot weather and plants that want to grab onto you and stick in you. You know, I mean, there's a lot of super challenging things about it, and horrible water. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, much of the water along the Arizona Trail was developed by ranchers for cattle, mm-hmm. you know, and you'll be like dipping water out of a pond to filter it. And there'll be a cow like standing in it, looking you in the eye while right. something comes out of its back end. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just horrible water. But the overall experience of pushing through all of that and seeing the incredible variety of you know, territory in Arizona is just an amazing experience. I mean, we've done that trail 3 times total now, so I have developed an affinity for it that may not be logical or all that easy to put into words. But if you wanted to narrow it down a little, my favorite part of the AZT, and there you kind of have to take the Grand Canyon out of the equation. Right. And that probably should have been said at the beginning, you know, barring the Grand Canyon and the Wonderland. But the Wilderness of Rocks near Mount Lemmon in Arizona, near Summer Haven, is really just exceptional stretch of trail. It's just got this otherworldly feel to it. So that's just one of my favorite sections of trail anywhere on the planet. But I don't know, parts of the PCT in Washington, mm-hmm. Like Goat Rocks area and Alpine Lakes. I mean, yeah, it's really difficult to say that one section of trail is kind of more worth getting to and experiencing than another.
that's all right. Like I said, they're all open-ended, and there's no right or wrong answer. Yeah. And I mean, who knows? You know, who knows wherever you end up in this year, next year, beyond, whatever things that maybe you haven't even thought of or certainly haven't announced yet, maybe those will take over. And I mean, that's one of those beautiful things of favorites, as favorites are always subject to change and evolve with time. So,
yeah, definitely.
It is what it is. But that's you know, places I've never been, and so certainly would love to get out there at some point. Maybe not to yo-yo anything, and maybe not to through hike it all, but at least to experience some of it. And something that I mean, I love following your adventures because it gives me places of things or you know, thoughts of like, well, wow, this would be a cool place to be that I've never heard of before. So that's always exciting to learn of those new places that are new gems, if you will, that are out there to be discovered.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Thanks. I'm glad. I mean, that's one of our big goals, is to help inspire people in the same way that other people inspire us. You know, like, we've got our heroes that we follow, like Anish and Dirtmonger and Lint. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people in the through hiking scene, especially Snorkel, Liz Thomas, you know, people that are just doing super cool things. And like Liz, she's been pioneering a lot of these urban through hikes. Mm. Which is so different, you know, and yet those catch my attention too. I mean, we have that experience on the trail. When you're doing a through hike and you hike into town to resupply, you end up having a really different experience of a community when you enter it and travel through it and then exit again by foot rather than in a vehicle. Mm-hmm. You know, especially for modern first world humans, you don't do that very often. Right. And it's a really different way to experience a community. So the idea, like what Liz has been doing with going into major cities like Seattle and Portland and doing an urban through hike, and she generally is trying to hit most of the stairways, you know, mm-hmm. and get the good climbs in it. And then she hits really just cool landmarks and cultural spots and things like that. But the idea of designing a route to try to experience a metropolitan area in the most complete way as possible is a really fascinating and intriguing idea. You know, so things like that fascinate me. Dirtmonger has put together some really, really interesting routes, combining different trails. Mm. One of my favorites that he did a few years ago, he called the Vagabond Loop. where he linked the Grand Enchantment Trail, the Arizona National Scenic Trail, the Hayduk Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail, the CDT, and, you know, to basically do this huge square through the Southwest. I mean, I love ideas like that to me. To me, that didn't make sense. I love ideas like that. They're fascinating to me. You know, it's I think of the old saying from King Solomon from like 5,000 years ago that there's nothing new under the sun, you know, and not meaning any disrespect, but there's so many new things under the sun.
Right.
Is, you know, that you couldn't claim that nowadays. Maybe it was true 5,000 years ago. I don't know. But there are just so many new things you can do. And we've got new ways of communicating, new ways of documenting our achievements, new ways of navigating. You know, so there's just all these new things that can be done, and not only done, but shared and used to inspire other people. And then somebody sees your crazy idea and another person's crazy idea, and they combine two or three of them and come up with a whole new crazy idea. You know, and I love that. To me, that is like humankind at its best, coming up with big, crazy ideas that inspire other bigger, crazier ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a great way to wrap things up. Guys, if you want to be inspired by what Roz and Kathy are up to, and I guarantee you will be, because it's impossible to pay attention to them for very long and not be inspired, ultrapedestrian.com is the website. And on whatever social media platform you're attuned to, you can pretty much find them there at Ultra Pedestrian as well. And I'll have other links for all those things and anything we talk about, and links back to Ross and myself's first chat, which again, episode 198 was the best of, probably the most recent one, easiest to find. If you want to hear us talk about his rim to rim, however many rims that is stuff, and a lot more about the Wonderland, lots of great stories in that episode as well. So check that out. Dizruns.com/380 is the show notes for this episode. Ross, I mean, thank you so much for taking the time, for reconnecting. I can comfortably say that you are 100% welcome back to share stories and anytime. I got a dozen things that we could have talked about today that we didn't get to, and that's fine. We'll save them. We'll push them back for another time. But thank you for taking the time. Godspeed to you and Kathy on the GET. And if there's ever anything we can do to support you, please let me know, and I'm happy to do that.
Hey, thank you so much, Denny. I really appreciate you having me on the show, and hey, have fun at your first 50K. I'm really stoked about that. I think that's exciting, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your experience.
All right, guys, that wraps up this episode of the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Roz and myself, and as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode. Quite honestly, for me, it's really hard to pick one thing. The whole chat is impressive and stands out. And I think that I'm going to kind of take the easy way out and kind of say that yeah, I mean, the whole thing was my takeaway, in that one of the things that I think makes running so unique is how there's room for everybody. And we say that before, we've said that before, in regards to maybe pace or, you know, experience level or distances run, where you can run, you know, 100 meters or you can run 100 miles or whatever, you know, whatever distances you're into, whatever paces you go, you know, running has room for all of us. And I think this just further exemplifies it, at least to me, that there's so much more. Or there's so many more types of runners beyond just those that I immediately think of. You know, when I think of runners, I think of you know, road runners and maybe some trail runners. But you know, I don't always think of through hikers. I don't always think of you know, fast packers and light packers and things like that. But why not? Why not? They're doing the same things that we're doing, only arguably they're doing them more impressively. I don't know. That's such a sliding scale. But you know, when I talked to Lint Hikes on the show way back when, who Roz mentioned there at the end, or referenced at the end, just another amazing through hiker and somebody that, you know, dabbles in races once in a while, but that's not his thing. And it's just, I don't know. I'm rambling now, but it's just you know, eye opening, I guess, to be exposed to some of the different facets of the sport, some of the different options, some of the different amazing things that people are doing. And that, you know, maybe the grand version of this episode, that it was the takeaway for me is just how amazing humans are and some of the things that we're able to do and how maybe our only limits are the limits we place upon ourselves. I don't know. Now I'm going to get philosophical and I better wrap things up before I do that. But I love this chat. And as I said, I could have talked to him for days. You know, this is a little bit longer than normal anyway. And this could have been two or three times as long as it ended up being. So great episode for my take. And I hope that you enjoyed it as well. Let me know what you think about it. Let me know if you like this episode, something a little different. And obviously let me know your takeaways as well. At DizRuns on the Twitter. DizRuns@gmail.com is the email. And you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which again, unlike what I said in the actual episode, show notes are DizRuns.com/377. And if you head there, you'll actually get to the right place and you can see some photos that I wanted to talk about, but we didn't even run out of time. So there's a whole lot of other things that Ross has been up to. Just ultraneering and different other only known time attempts and just crazy stuff. So check it out. All the links are there. Links to some great detailed blog posts and whatnot as well. And also links to the first conversation if you missed that. But this outro has gone on long enough, so I'm going to wrap this thing up. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to find out more about coaching, and the options that I have available, DizRuns.com/coaching is the link. And you can obviously get there from the website as well very easily. You can find your way there. And let me know what questions you have. If there's something I can help you with, I'm happy to do so. So with that, let's put a bow on this thing. It's gone on long enough, at least for one day. Or at least I've gone on long enough at the end. Roz could have kept going for days and I would have let him. But I'll cut myself off here. So thank you guys for listening. I hope you have a great rest of the day. And look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, guys.